Hey there, this is Seth Wars from Channel 9, coming to you from Building 25 with a special guest, Josh Kaplan. How you doing, bud?
Good, how you doing?
Good, it's been a while since we chatted, and you said you had some new features you wanted to show me.
Yeah, so I recently started working on a product called Azure Analysis Services.
Okay.
And people will recognize the name from SQL Server Analysis Services, a product that has shipped with SQL for a very long time now. And traditionally, when people think of analysis services, they think of multi-dimensional OLAP cubes. Uh-huh. Back in about 2010, we released this new tabular object model, which gave you a new way to model your data, a new simpler way to model your data, and a very fast in-memory cache. And then very recently, we took this product and we now made it part of Azure. Just like SQL Azure, we now have Azure Analysis Services.
I see. So before, for those that were really excited to use Analysis Services to do like OLAP cubes or whatever other number crunching you wanted to do, that was a product available. But now what you've done is you've moved it up into the cloud so you can do it with SQL Azure. Is that right?
Yep. So people who have used Azure Analysis Services before will get all the benefits of the cloud. And we spent a lot of time and paid a lot of attention to make sure that you could just move your models from your on-premise analysis services to the cloud. Same tools would work. We can even go run profile, you can connect with Management Studio, all the same things you used to do will now work in the cloud.
So my guess is that you probably try to keep all of the good features.
Yep.
But there's gotta be some difference, right?
There are some differences. The biggest thing is now when you want to provision a new machine, make some new models, you might have to go out and buy a whole new server previously. Get those installed in a data center, get those up and running, install SQL. So now I can actually just come into the Azure portal.
All right, let's take a look. So right now what we're doing is we're setting up a new Azure Analysis Service.
Yep, the cloud way.
Okay.
I can come in and under Intelligence and Analytics, we can find Analysis Services. This is currently in preview.
Got it.
You can click on that. And you can name your server.
So is this creating a VPN, or is this, what is this doing?
It's basically creating...
not a VPN, a virtual machine. Why am I saying VPN? I was trying to do VPN earlier today, and it just got in my head. Are you setting up a virtual machine?
So it's a fully managed PaaS service, so there's no virtual machine for you to manage, there's no OS for you to manage, but you are getting dedicated capacity.
I see.
So you're in a step here in a moment, you'll see we'll pick a capacity we want, and we will have that capacity reserved just for us.
And that capacity is the compute capacity of the number crunching you're going to be doing with it.
Yeah, let's take a look at that and we'll see what the different things are.
Let's go in there.
And let me start that over. Pick a resource group just like I would for any other Azure service. Pick an existing one. Anything I do here in the UI is also then automatable through Azure, through ARM. And I can pick the different SKUs, and this is the capacity I talked about reserving. Basically, the capacity refers to two different things. One is the amount of cache you have available to you. So I mentioned earlier we have two parts of analysis services. One is this data model, and we'll talk about the benefits of that in a moment. And the other is this really fast data cache. Mm-hmm. It's an in-memory cache, it's column-oriented, and it'll give you amazing, amazing performance speeds when you're doing analytical queries.
So I'm looking at this, and I'm seeing query processing units.
Yes.
That's different than, for example, memory or processor. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
That really talks about how much compute power you have to handle queries as they come in. So it's kind of a relationship to how many queries you can serve in parallel.
Got it.
The cache will dictate how quickly those queries run and how much you can fit into that cache.
I see. So you have the caching there set up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you have the dedicated service and then whether or not it's SSL, which is kind of cool, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have a developer SKU for people who want to get started and just try it out. That one does not come with the dedicated capacity. You'll basically be on shared capacity. But any of the standard editions, you'll have reserved capacity just for you.
Got it.
So let's pick a... any particular size? Let's start with we'll do the S2.
Wow, you're going all out, man.
That's what I'm approved for. Let's see, I'll go pin that to my dashboard and say create. So I don't have to unbox a server, I don't have to requisition a server. It's going to go do some middle metadata operations here, spin up our own instance. And within a minute, we should see the actual server go created.
So while it's getting up there, well, let's chat a little bit because let's see if I understand this right. Analysis services on Azure will do all of the heavy lifting on top of your SQL database to do all the complex computations. And the query units is how many queries can come at it at a time.
Yeah.
And the cache is how fast that stuff is going to come back. Is that right?
Yeah, so you can build a model on top of your data to describe how your data should be queried to your actual end users who are going to go ahead and query, or your business users. Now, the model, when users query the model, they can actually go and fire those queries off against your SQL database. Like, the model actually will generate the queries for you and fire them off to your SQL database. Or you can use the cache, which will actually serve those queries directly out of memory, which will make them a lot faster and also will reduce that load on your SQL database.
Okay, so initially what it's doing is it's like a pass-through thing where it formulates the queries that it needs, it asks SQL Server to bring it back, and then it does the caching.
Yep, we have two modes. One we call our direct query mode, where we're firing off those queries directly against your database, and one where we call the cache mode.
I see. So the other question is, while this is getting set up, is what are the kinds of queries that we can shoot at analysis services?
Well, let's take a look. This will come up in about a second, but I have one actually still going.
Okay.
Or already started. And let's actually look at some of the reasons why we might want to go ahead and model that data.
Okay.
So this is actually the data itself as it sits in an Azure data warehouse.
Got it.
It's a pretty large data set. We'll figure out exactly how large it is in a moment, but this is actually showing taxi data for New York City cabs.
Oh, nice.
It's a pretty large data set. But if you wanted to go ahead and tell me the number of trips by the different pickup or drop-off locations, mm-hmm. Now, how would you have to go about doing this? First of all, you'd have to get access to the database itself.
Sure.
You'd have to figure out which table has the right number of trips. You know, this one kind of looks like a trip table, so I'll go look at that. Oh, there's other in here that say trip. Then there might be, do I have to count the rows in there? Is there a certain column I need to sum? You just have to know how to query the data. Now, right. To get to the zip codes, I might have to join that to another table. I have to know how it joins. And I kind of have to figure this out as I go along, in addition to having to know SQL as well.
And so the interesting thing about this is, like, that's a complicated query.
Yeah.
And what I mean by complicated is that I measure complicatedness of queries based upon the number of joins.
Yep.
Because that's the most expensive operation, right?
And you have to figure out what those joins are in this case. You won't know how this data is related. You'll have to maybe look it up somewhere. You'll have to do some trial and error.
Sure.
A lot of times you'll have two different users come into a meeting together, supposedly reporting on the same numbers, but having different results. And
sure.
That's when we get to what we call the one version of the truth, which you would have to know how to get to that here.
Right.
So one way of solving this is actually going ahead and building a data model in analysis services. So this is our experience inside Visual Studio. It's called, the tool here is called SSDT, or SQL Server Data Tools.
Okay.
It's also used for the SQL Server product itself. And in there you have the database projects and you have analysis services projects. So what we've done here is we've actually taken that data that was in those tables in the data warehouse and we've modeled them. We've put some friendly names on here. You can tell this doesn't look exactly like it does in the data warehouse. So we actually redesigned the data to be a little friendlier and also to be a little bit more optimized for the types of queries we're going to send to it.
Sure.
And in addition to, and also we've also put in the joins between the tables. So what we've done here is we built a model that knows how this data should be described and how this data all fits together.
Right.
Which means a user querying it now can use those descriptions to discover what data is there and doesn't have to know how to join it together, can just start pulling the fields they need and using it. So we're going to actually look at one of those measures and see the additional business logic you can actually bake into this model.
Okay.
So let's look at revenue per trip. I'm going to flip over to our measure view here. And we can see that the revenue per trip is actually calculated as the trip count, or as the revenue divided by the number of trips.
Got it.
It's a simple calculation, but this is something you would have to know how to do. And you also have to know how these are each calculated as well. But this is something you'd have to know how to do if you were manually going to write these queries.
So let's go back, guys. I have a question because I'm like, if you ever see my eyes gloss over, it's like, oh shoot, I'm missing something. So let's go back to the model view.
Yep.
And when we're looking at this model for trips, mm-hmm. those are the measures that you've created based upon all of these other datas that are sort of aligned to it? Is that what you're saying? Or?
Yeah, so based off of the actual tables that we have in the data warehouse, we can bring those tables and columns in. Now we can also transform those to look a little different if we want to be a little bit more aggregated. And then we can also add more tables to it if it better helps explain the data. Now we can use the tables and columns that are in there to also then We can use those within calculations to also take that business logic that is either in someone's head or is written on paper and actually put it into the model. So when someone goes into a tool like Power BI or a tool like Excel, they can just drag in number of trips and they just have number of trips.
So as I'm looking at trip, mm-hmm. trip, is it a table inside that's coming over one to one? But then there's extra fields that you're adding for calculations, is that right?
It doesn't necessarily have to come in one to one. In a lot of cases, you're going to have a data warehouse that'll have a lot of detail in it, a lot of grain in there that you don't necessarily need for reporting. So you can transform the data into what's best needed for the reports. For example, if users are always summing down, let's say you had hourly data in your data warehouse, and users are always looking at things at a day level or above, you don't want to necessarily have your hourly data in the model, in your cache, for users to just sum it up every time they run a query. So you can kind of pre-sum that up, and anytime the query comes in, it'll already be at the right level, and you're doing a lot less work, which leads to better performance.
And that's where the caching happens.
That's where the caching helps as well.
So the question I have then is, as we're looking at this trip table, we're looking at some of these fields that are in there. As you scroll down, there were some fields that looked like they were more aggregated.
Yeah, so...
Like revenue per trip. I mean, that's not something that's an original trip table.
Right, so the way... We have two types of calculations in our model. One is kind of an on-row calculation. We call them calculated columns. And that's just basically like any other column you have in the table. You can use a formula to derive it. And basically, when you put the formula in there, we run the calculation. And for each row in the table, we store that value.
Right. So example, you have the trip was 10 miles. It took 5 hours.
Yep.
And then you just say, well, the calculation of the average speed was just the distance divided by the time,
right,
or the other way around.
Now, some things are a little bit more, need to be a little bit more dynamic in that, and they will basically, the value is not something that can be pre-computed, but is dependent on what your other fields and what other filters you use in your query. And that's where these measures come in, where you can derive something where the value won't be pre-stored, but it'll be calculated in real time every time you submit a query.
And that's part of the trip table, then?
Yeah, so it is housed on that trip table.
Got it. I see. Because the trip table is something in SQL Server, and then sort of those calculations are something that are sort of inferred in analysis services.
Yep. And I can name these tables anything I want to. I can name the columns anything I want to. They don't have to correspond to what's in the database. And in most cases, you don't want to, because the databases are often more technical, and they're often more designed to store the data most efficiently and also be most efficient for querying in those databases, versus where this is more designed to be semantically kind of appealing to the user and also designed to for business user reporting.
So effectively, to speak in database terms, SQL Server analysis services is where you sort of denormalize the data in a way that's consumable by people that want to do reporting.
Yeah, this is your business abstraction layer. This is what explains the data to your user. And the advantages here too is if you want to make an optimization to your underlying SQL database, you just do it, and you don't have to go out and retrain your users. Now pull this data this way instead of this way.
Sure.
You just change it. You update your model to transform it back into the view that the user is used to seeing it, and they continue querying the model as if nothing had happened.
And so this brings us back now to these things called measures that you were showing us. Could you go back to the measures and sort of explain what a measure is in relation to these sort of things that you're doing?
Yeah, so the measure here, and it's written in a formula language we call DAX, or data analysis expressions. Mm-hmm. And these are going to be calculated in kind of runtime, in query time. And they're based on the context of the other fields, the other filters that the user pulled in. So maybe it's best to actually show.
Let's do it.
I've deployed this model to an Azure Analysis Services server, like the one we created earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I can come in here, or I can come into a tool like Excel or like Power BI, and I've connected to it already, but you can see here on the right-hand side,
those tables.
Those are
the tables.
And
they're not necessarily the tables, but they're the representations that we have analyzed.
Yes, these are the representation of how I want to display the data to the users connecting from here.
And the way you connect, how do you connect? Is there like a connection somewhere?
Yeah, so you can go, let's actually do it, I'll show you in Excel real quick how you do it. Because the same tools work in Excel, and there's a lot of other tools as well, including some third-party tools out there that will also connect to analysis services. So I can come in, if I'm doing this in Excel, I can say get external data, I can say from other sources, and I'll say from analysis services. And I put in our server name. We can put in an AAD user account. and just hit connect.
And then it's going to ask you what sort of tables you want, or what model first.
Well, the model's already actually built, so it's going to ask me just, normally you'd have one model in here. What you can do is you can create what we call multiple perspectives. So I can say, okay, here's the view of the data for the sales team. Here's the view of the data for the sales managers.
I see.
And you could come in here and pick, okay, here's the view I want to see. Is it my finance? Am I looking at expenses? Am I looking at sales? Am I looking at expenses? Things like that. You can then group together in what we call perspectives. I'll say connect. And in Excel, you can do pivot tables. And now on the right-hand side, we get that same semantic model, and we see our field list.
Cool.
This time in Excel. And if I connect and you connect, you know, we might be running the same queries, but we might have different access to the data. So you can actually, in the model, you can enforce what we call row-level security, so that when even though we're looking at the same things, running the same queries, you might only see the data you're allowed to see, and I'm only seeing the data I'm allowed
to
see.
Which is perfect.
And that's regardless of whatever source is actually underneath.
Love it.
So let's run some queries.
All right. And we're going to make pictures now out of the data, which is my favorite.
We're going to visualize. We're going to make some pictures. And let's look at actually the number of trips. That was the first thing I said, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's look in here, and I actually have something called trip count. I'm going to go, and I'm going to just drag that on here. It's going to go. And let me turn this to a different visual so you can easily see the number. 2.4 billion. There's actually 2.4 billion rows in that table.
Which, wow.
So when we actually dragged that in there, it went and ran that query. It's hitting our cache, and it came back in about a second.
Which is good, because I mean, when you get to that scale of things, like having an extra trip or two in there is really not going to affect the number.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to make a bunch of visuals, and each visual is going to start sending queries at the same time.
Got it.
Let's see how that looks. So let's look at actually the different trips, where the different pickups are happening. This is in New York City. These are for cabs. So look at the revenue by the different pickup locations. So I'm just going to put in our latitude and longitude, which are in the model for the pickup location. I'm going to throw in the revenue. Bam, that just ran a query against that same 2 billion rows. Now we have a map of New York. The model has some heuristics of about the data, and it says that longitude and latitude are
map
geography.
Layer.
Yeah. So then the Power BI desktop here assumes, okay, I'll put them in a map.
So what it's doing then is it's looking at the kind of data that you have, and it's trying to make the best visualization for the kind of data, and then you can change afterwards.
Yep. So the model not only describes the data to the user, but it actually helps describe the data to the tools that are using it.
I love it.
They can use that metadata to power their experiences. So there's a lot of trips in New York, obviously. Let's see if we can narrow it down. Let's look at the just the number of trips, and we'll look at it by the different zip codes. So where the pickups are happening. So I'm gonna pull zip codes in here. Oh, actually, let's look at revenue per trip, not the number of trip count.
You know what's cool, though, is like here's the thing. Before you do that, because people are looking at that and like, oh, he did the wrong chart. But here's the thing. We're all going to make the wrong chart. But usually, if you're running the wrong chart on 2 billion rows, you got to go take a break.
Yeah, and if the semantic model helps you understand the data, discover the data, but if you don't know what the data is, you can go actually experiment, try it. You're not paying a price to do that. And I actually figured out I pulled the wrong field in there because the data did not look right to me.
Yeah, so let's go back and let's show us fixing the mistake.
So I'm just going to go and remove trip count, and I'm going to take in the just the revenue. And you know what, I'm going to cheat for a second. About revenue per trip. Is it backable or?
Yeah, I mean, if you, is that the data not working or?
No, that was me, I picked the wrong field.
That's okay, yeah. Well, let's pick the right field.
So I'll take the revenue out.
Okay.
And we'll take revenue per trip in.
Okay.
And now I can see, we have two big zip codes here. So
oh, okay.
Two big
Got
zip
it.
Codes have the highest revenue per trip. Do you have any idea what those might be?
11430 and 11369.
This is New York.
So my guess is that the trips that are going to have the most revenue are the ones that are going the farthest, right?
Yeah. But there's two that really stand out, and this is New York.
I don't know.
So let's, well, we can find out. We can click on the first one, and it actually will run queries to filter down our map.
Oh, and it's the airport.
That one is, yeah, that one's JFK Airport, and the second one being LaGuardia Airport. So the airports have the highest revenue per trip in New York. And you can actually see, you can see all the different pickup locations. So here's the airport here, here's the highway. So according to the data, there's actually people lining up on the highway to get their cabs.
Nice.
And that's a way to cut the line. But you know, just by having these things linked together and be able to run these queries so fast, we're actually able to see this data update, you know, very quickly and see how it correlates together.
And I love how the visualization here for LaGuardia continues to show that LaGuardia is the worst airport. That was a joke. Don't get mad at me about LaGuardia. So here's the thing I'm asking, and this is a Power BI thing. It looks like it's doing automatic filtering by selection, through the selection.
Correct, cross filtering. And the data model where I showed those tables and the relationships before, that's how we know everything's related together. So I can click on something in a seemingly unrelated table to the user, but the model knows how to then go and filter down the other, the other visuals. And actually, you can even see in here the number of rows is changing, the number of trip count is changing every time I click on one of these things. So there's 41 million rows. This is LaGuardia and then JFK. But you mentioned something about LaGuardia. Let's see if you're a cab driver in New York, which is actually the best place to pick up. Because right now it looks like you can make more money per trip in JFK.
Right.
So let's bring in, let's make some room here and bring in one more visual.
So maybe LaGuardia is better, and I was wrong the whole time.
Let's see. Now let's bring in that trip count, and then let's look at the average trip duration, which is all I'm doing is dragging in trip duration here. I don't have to figure out how to calculate that.
Right.
And I'm going to change the visual a little bit, and you can actually change the way how these visuals interact with each other in their port too. So I'm going to actually change this one to if I click on interaction, I'm going to change it so that this visual here filters down this visual here, not just cross highlights it. I'll do it by doing that. So okay, let's look at JFK again. So JFK, the most frequent number of trips are between 30 and 45 minutes. Now LaGuardia, most frequent is between 15 and 30 minutes. So you know, I think they have flat rates in New York when you're going from the airport. Even though you can make a little bit more money per trip in JFK, you can actually go ahead and get more trips if you're going to LaGuardia.
Well, that makes sense, right? Because I was in New York for a Connect, and we landed at JFK. The trip was going to be longer to get to Midtown Manhattan, which is where we were staying,
it's
or downtown.
Pretty far. I've done that one, too.
Yeah. Okay, that's awesome. And so the reason why this is working so fast and the reason why this is so buttery, shall I say, is because it's going through analysis, Azure Analysis Services, which may have a lot of this data already cached.
Correct. So the model we had to make it easier to describe the data in the cache, this in-memory cache, is what's providing this really fast analytics over the data. And what we've done here, too, is the data is in a data warehouse, is an Azure data warehouse, and we're able to intercept these queries and serve them out of cache, which reduces a lot of the load that's on the data warehouse and allows that to be used for other things that require that deep level of detail and the queries to go against that full level of data that's in there.
And not only that, but you get this snappiness that people want when they're working with the data, because we made a couple of mistakes, but we were able to recover quickly without having to worry about what's going on.
Yeah, we call this exploring the data.
Got it.
The data's so fast that you can just drag drop things in there and you can explore it and you can discover insights that way just by going through this level of speed.
So the other question I have is, this is all made possible by Azure Analysis Services. Is this something that people can start to use now?
Yes, we're in preview now. You can go to the Azure portal and do what I showed earlier and just say create a new Azure Analysis Services database. We have, I recently put out a blog post that'll walk you through steps of building your first
model. We'll put it below so you can see it. Yeah.
And we have some samples as well that are available to try.
Well, awesome. Anything else we need to add before we end this one?
I think that's it.
That's awesome. Today we learned about Azure Analysis Service. If you've been using SQL Analysis Services before and you've been wanting to make this also work on your SQL databases on Azure, looks like we got something for you.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Josh, for being with us. Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9, and we'll see you next time. Take care.